You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey guys, it's Adam. This is The Conversation, and I am so excited that you are tuning in, whether you're listening through on iTunes, on Spotify, whether you're listening through with our partners at Faith Radio, a huge welcome and hello to you. Well, this is one of my favorite times of the year. Here in the great state of South Dakota, it officially feels like spring. Thank you, God. I love the smell of fresh-cut grass. I love hearing the birds chirping in the morning. When I leave my house and I walk out to my garage, just in general, one of the things I love about spring is seeing life return. New life and old life, just seeing life return, both to nature, but also to people. It's like all of us come alive each and every spring. I got my first sunburn last weekend, and so I love seeing life return. And on that note, I just want to encourage you, if there's a part of you, if there's a part of your attitude or maybe a relationship or your marriage that feels like it's stuck in winter, if there's a part of you that just feels like it's dead, I want to encourage you to invite God to move in that area. Tell him, God, would you bring new life to my marriage? God, would you bring new life to my attitude or to this certain place? Maybe it's your workplace that you're just like, gosh, I just go there and I just come with a bad attitude. God, would you move in me, and would you move me from winter into spring? We have a God who specializes in bringing dead things back to life. And so I just want to encourage you with that. In today's episode, I sat down with a dear friend of mine named Jennifer Dukes Lee. I sat down with Jennifer along with her husband, Scott, and we talked about the importance of growing slow. Now, I don't like the word slow at all. I'm naturally an impatient person who likes to run fast, but we talked about the importance of growing slow. And we really had a unique perspective on that because both Jennifer and Scott live on their family farm. Jennifer was a journalist and Scott was a lawyer when years back they decided to leave it all behind and go back to Scott's family farm. And so Scott brings this rich, wonderful perspective along with Jennifer about what it looks like to grow slow and the importance of growing slow. I have no doubt you are going to be encouraged. And so as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, Scott and Jennifer, I want to welcome you to the conversation today. Super excited about having the both of you. Usually it's Jennifer flying solo, and yet I'm excited about having both halves of the Lee family here today. So I want to welcome you to the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're so excited to be here, aren't we, Scott?
We are.
There was a little bit of haggling maybe that had to go in to get Scott here, but...
It was.
Well, I thought until last night, I thought we weren't on site. I thought I could go do a little work and come back in my farm clothes, and she has her little setup in the house, and I thought I can just jump in and make a couple comments and sneak out early.
So we went and did the chores and then we got in the car, and it's our little Monday morning date.
Yeah, you got a Monday morning date. That is great. Well, Jennifer, I want to hop in. You got a new book coming out. And just to tell you, I'm not really a fan of the title. The title's called Growing Slow. As an Enneagram 3 who likes to do everything very fast, I'm like, I really don't like this title. But jump in and just share the heartbeat behind your newest book.
Yeah, I don't like it either. I'm an Enneagram 3 too, you know that. And so the way that I'm wired, the book that I actually could have written really quickly is Growing Fast, because that's been my whole life. I've just been a hustle girl, go big or go home. If you want something done, just ask me to do it, I'll get it done. And I've wanted to grow everything quickly, my relationships, my family, my faith, my platforms on social media, book sales. I don't care what it is. I just want to see growth and I want to see it quickly. And I want to be able to tick off the boxes and move on to the next thing. Yeah. And so what happens with a personality like that and fast growth is a couple of things. We end up constantly in a hurry. I'm in my 40s, in my late 40s, and began to look around at my life and thinking, I am constantly on the move. Life is a blur. I'm missing so much. And I'm also not taking time to validate the good things that are already growing in my life. And I needed permission to grow slow. I needed permission so that I can embrace the life that God had already given me to live. And also to put down good roots. And I know some people are like, roots, Jennifer, say roots, but I'm Northwest Iowa, I say roots. So let's just make
too.
That.
I do too.
Let's make that clear right up front. But I wanted to have deep-rooted, sustainable living. We live on a farm. We've been there for 18 years, Scott's fifth generation family farm. And there's something called sustainable agriculture, which takes the long view of land and takes the long view of food production. What does it look like to live sustainably and to grow things that last instead of being a sort of flash in the pan? And that's the way I want to live the rest of my life.
Yeah, that is so good. And I think most of us are constantly running and going. And so I just, even for myself, it's hard to unhurry your life. Like I've told my wife a little while ago, instead of being available to everybody, I want these certain people to have high access to my life, my family, a few close friends, and also my actual neighbors that I live around. Like, I'm like, I want them to be able to knock on my door, and I'm excited about them knocking rather than hiding. And that only comes by having really an unhurried life. It's just making some of those decisions of, no, I do not have to run a million miles an hour all the time. So from your book, so how do we get to that place?
Watching Scott farm all these years that we've been on the farm, I have seen how God uses seasons to grow good things. Scott puts down a seed into the ground, millions of seeds into 700 acres of land, and they're in the dark for days, maybe a week or more sometimes before we see any growth. And if I was a corn seed, I would be freaking out. Like, why am I in the dark? What is going on here? And then little bits of growth come, just bits at a time. Like, you'll look out and you'll be like, I think I see a hint of green there.
Yeah.
And then before long, there's more growth until the rows are touching and everything is green. But you don't see that growth second by second, minute by minute, or even day by day. It's when you look back on the week or the month where you see that growth that seemed imperceptible at the time was actually working toward something harvestable. Then comes harvest. And for us, we're harvesting crops. Some people are harvesting tomatoes, harvesting ideas, whatever it is, to hold that fully ripened thing in your hand and say, look, let's celebrate this. But then 1/4 of a whole growing season on a farm is winter.
Yeah.
And Scott, you always talk about winter healing the land.
I'm not a fan of winter. I'll be the first to admit. I don't know that many people are. But for the soil, it is, you know, Jennifer talks about rocks in some of the chapters of the book in the Bible study. But it, you know, it's the frost can actually expel, slowly push those imperfections, those problems. But just compaction and wounds to the ground from, you know, a really wet year a couple of years ago, where any equipment we took out on the farm fields just caused this compaction and really affected the soil profile, which then it's hard for the roots of the crops to get in there. We have all this incredible equipment we can use as well, but God's work in the frost and that cycle is amazing and does far more than we as humans can. So yeah, really a healing, and humans can't do that.
Right. Yeah we want to, you know, people want to live. Let's keep planting. Let's keep growing. Let's keep harvesting. And then boom, let's start planting some more. But the way that God is working through winter seasons of the land is that it heals the land. Those rocks come up. What about if we took 1/4 of our life and just rested and allowed winter to do its work in us, unearthing burdens and rocks and the stuff that's under the soil, right? And so that taught us a lot about what it means to grow slow, embracing seasons.
Yeah, that's incredible to think about there being a purpose to winter and having those seasons even of pausing. It's taken me years, even in my preaching, over the summers, I usually take more of a breath from preaching. And then typically what I do is I end up speaking all every place else. And it's like, I get to the end of it and I'm like, you never took time to pause. Like, you had this built-in opportunity. And so even last week, I said no to like 5 or 6 speaking engagements. And I'm just like, that felt so good to say no, instead of filling it and wanting to plant again and again and again. Jennifer, same question for you. Has there been things on the farm that you've learned just about God and just what you've learned in your relationship with Him?
Yeah, definitely trusting God to bring rain and to bring sun. And even when it doesn't come as we wanted or when we wanted, that God sees a big picture and he sees the whole puzzle when we see only pieces. You know, I think too, comparison is a really big deal in life. We often will, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. I see farmers like driving around, they got their seed corn caps on and they're in their pickup trucks and they're looking around to see whose field's looking pretty good and how it compares to theirs. I mean, it's such an apt metaphor for the way that we all are, because you can look at another church and you can look at, I can look at another book author or I can look at another mom on the bleachers and think, yeah, they've really got it figured out. Yeah. And I think that we can compare our crops, so to speak, to other fields and not validate the good things that are growing in our lives. And so just to step back and just to look at the fields that God has given you and appreciate what he is growing in the fields. But then it says in one of the letters to the Corinthians, Paul, when he wrote, he said, you are God's field. Yeah. He says those words specifically, you are God's field. And I am all about outputs all the time. And like, what if I just paused for a minute and thought about myself as a field that God is planting seeds into, and that as much as he cares about the stuff that I'm doing out in the world, like what would it be if I just saw myself as a field that God is growing things like kindness and generosity and faithfulness and steadfastness? Like those are really important things to God that he wants to grow in me as his field.
Yeah, that is so good. You ruined my picture of farmers, by the way. I pictured farmers as like the most genuine, never struggle with things like comparison. And now I'll never look at farmers that the same way. But no, I think it's so crazy how we all do struggle in that way with comparison. And really, that kind of leads me to what I want to ask. I think so often, this is something I feel constantly, is that I should be further along in my life. I should be further along in my preaching as a pastor, as a father, as a husband, as a human being, in my relationship with God. I shouldn't be struggling with this or that. What would you say to that person who feels like, gosh, I should be further?
I would say the biggest reason we are all in such a hurry is because we feel like we're farther behind than we ought to be. And so it happens early. I know juniors in high school that feel like they should know what they're going to do with the rest of their lives, which college, which major, as if that's going to even be really valid when they're 30 years old. But they're like, everybody else knows. Then you get to college. I should be further along by now. If I'm going to get married, I got to find my spouse now before all the good ones are taken. Yeah. Then you get married. I should be further along by now. Maybe I'm supposed to have kids. All my friends are buying houses. Then you get to be 35. I need a bigger house. I should be further along by now. Got to have the 3-car garage. 50 years old, I should be further along by now. I need to have a vacation home. And then it applies to your career, your friendships, your faith, whatever it is. And somewhere along the line, we believe that there are milestones for these things. And I don't know who set these milestones for all these things, but it's ruining us. And we're chasing after this invisible target and missing what God is doing in our lives. And we're often comparing ourselves to strangers on the internet, thinking that's what it's supposed to look like. And if we just dial it back a little bit, get a little quiet, get a little bit peaceful with God and see that he's got us right where we are for a reason. And he's the pace that he's got us on is the pace that he has set before us. And pushing and hustling is just going to wear us out. I mean, it takes a physical toll. There is something called hurry sickness. It's an actual trauma to the body. And a doctor told me, you've got that. You've got hurry sickness. And when he told me that I was just living a stressed out life, I'm like, I'm not stressed out. I know stressed out people. But I'd been running on adrenaline from the moment I woke up almost every day of my life. Feet hit the floor, adrenaline up, cortisol up, fight or flight up. And then when you stop all that, it's hard. Growing slow is hard to do because you've been on an adrenaline high, maybe for years, and you think that's the way it has to feel in life. And so it is difficult. And sometimes even for people like you and me and Scott, it feels boring. Like, I'm not getting the rush of whatever it is. But when people tell me that I can't do that, that just sounds boring, or I'm going to get behind, or somebody's going to think I'm lazy, I just say to them, how is that life of hustle treating you right now? Just give it 2 weeks of dialing it back and trying a different way.
That's so good. So getting practical with that, what are some things we can do to dial back, to slow down, like share that part of things? Because again, I'm taking steps of it. Even myself, I had an appointment first thing this morning, and so I didn't sit with God like I typically do. And then before this time, what I did, and every part of me wanted to come up right away. And yet I honestly just sat in my office in quiet for about 10 minutes. And that's not normal for me, because I would have filled it, jumped. I got emails that I got to get it back to. But I was just like, gosh, I can just tell my soul is so hurried right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to, I legitimately just sat in my chair and looked at the wall and talked with the Lord for a little bit. So what does that look like? Even for that 2-week period, what would you say to that person who's like, okay, I'm all in. Everything you said is me.
Absolutely.
Share to that person.
So just so if you're listening right now, knowing that this is actually an entire mindset shift for a lot of people. But I am going to offer you a few ideas to get you started and give you a taste. And number one is, like you said, those 10 minutes, it sort of set the tone for how you feel about the rest of the day. You got started a little bit later than usual. But I would recommend setting an alarm 10 hours early, or excuse me, not 10 hours, 10 minutes earlier, and setting the tone for your day, welcoming the day, whatever that looks like for you, whether it's being in the Word or whether it's just standing out under an open sky and saying, thank you, God, for this beautiful world. We don't have to complicate it. Just welcoming the day. Another thing that we can do is to stop checking our phones when we're in places like the line at Target, or even at stoplights. And I know people do it, and I've done it too.
I've never done such a horrible thing.
But what happens is, it may seem sort of harmless to do something like that, but let's say you're checking your email at the Target line and it's an urgent email and it needs attention right away. But because you're about ready to check out, you cannot take care of that situation in that moment. So for the next 20 minutes, you're on your way home, hurry is hanging around the edge of your heart. And so it creates, again, that cortisol, adrenaline, fight or flight, and you're in another place. You're not really present with whatever you're doing. I mean, those are just a couple simple things. For me, it's been looking back on the last year and saying, while I was in lockdown, while life was different, what were the things that changed that were most important to me?
Yeah.
And it came down to time spent with family, longer dinners, dinner with candles, trying fun new foods where, you know, each of us would take turns making some surprise dinner, walks every single day. I mean, I think all of us can look back to those first couple weeks when we were in lockdown and think that despite all the tragedy and all the heartache that happened from COVID, there were little gifts in there. And as we rush back to normal, remember what we learned during that enforced period of slowness. We were all living, growing slow lives. What are the things that we learned? So for anybody who's listening right now, those are specific to you. And I know we all had them because Amazon ran out of puzzles, stores ran out of bread yeast. There were certain things that we were all doing that were different because we took a slow down approach to life.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott, what does slowing down look like for someone like yourself? How does that look? And what does even hurry look like for you on a farm?
Well, back to comparison, that is with a farm, with probably any business, any ministry, any, you know, even hobbies. I mean, again, you can always be looking at, from a farmer perspective, it's okay, this neighbor has this new technology. Should I be thinking about adopting that or this new equipment or just bought another farm, you know, so that, you know, from an ag perspective, there's always that comparison and that, can I be doing this?
And even like the amount of acres you're farming, the amount of head of cattle or hogs.
Absolutely. Like. And we owned a family, we still own a family business too, but at one point had 30 employees and we were just running ragged all the time. And it was a zoo, and we probably weren't very good employers, and we made some great products, a small manufacturing company. But as we've backscaled that, we've learned a lot of lessons in that, and that we can, with fewer people and being more intentional and more quality control, that, you know, it's a much better pace of life. And the outcome is very important. And same with the farm. I mean, it's just like Jennifer said, the forced slowdown of the past year, We had a senior in high school who was ready for all her end of the year prom and graduation and all these events. And some were postponed until summer, but she missed a lot of those. But there were many, many blessings that we can now see. And I know not everybody can see those yet at this point, but many blessings that we now realize in hindsight.
Yeah, no, that's so good. Well, Jennifer, one of the things you talk about the importance of deep roots and putting down deep roots. Do you want to jump into that? Scott, you can share from a farmer's perspective the importance of that. Kind of the ball. I'll let the both of you kind of go ready, set, go on that.
Right. So I think that in our culture, we look at what's growing based on what's measurable from the ground up.
Yeah.
Like what people can see in our ministry or whatever. But what we can't see is the most important of all, and it's what's growing down. And so if we paid more attention to that, I think that what's growing up is going to be able to, you know, withstand storms and hold us steady in times of trial. I mean, you've got great farming analogy for deep-rooted growth and why that matters.
Absolutely. Look at our corn plants that everybody in the upper Midwest is very familiar with, acres and acres and square miles of it. But we have, again, back to the weather and control, we have years that there's abundant moisture, and just 2 years ago, a very, very dry year.
Yeah.
And the end of last summer too. But the corn plant will put these roots down past 6 feet, seeking that moisture. It isn't just about sustaining in that moisture. It, again, like Jennifer said, that stability and that able to sustain winds and storms. And so there's, again, a lesson from God there that I've got this. You don't not need to worry about it.
And that's the stuff that nobody can see.
Yeah.
And so if we're completely output oriented and have our eyes fixed on the externals and outputs, we're forgetting about the growth that God cares about most. And it says in scripture to put down deep roots in him. Like, I want deep root growth, that things that I'm growing now will actually outlive me.
Yeah.
You know, that when they don't remember Jennifer's name anymore, that some seed that I planted 100 years previous makes a difference because my kids passed it to their kids, passed it to their kids, or whatever that looks like, but that I'm leaving some kind of legacy because I cared more about what was going down than what was showing above the soil.
Oh, isn't that so good? I can remember years back, about 6-7 years ago, a friend of mine came and preached at Embrace, and we were in the midst of this insane season of growth. And I'll never forget him saying, so I asked him, I'm like, hey, what do you think we should be doing? And he said to me, and he's an Enneagram 3 as well, he said to me, Adam, I'm not concerned about your growth. I mean, this place is just on fire in the best way. He said, but I am concerned about your foundation. Like, I'm concerned about your roots. And I said, really? Like, what? Why that? And he's like, you're just growing so fast. And there was so much wisdom in that. I only wish I could kind of rewind and like, tell me that again, because this is really good. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff that you don't want to hear that's so important to hear. And it's the stuff that you shared. Like, it's what matters. Like, I think at the end of my life, I hope very few people remember my name. But hopefully through me, they know his name.
That's
know God's
right.
name. And those things, they don't happen overnight. You can't microwave life change. It takes time. And so I think that's the good stuff of life that we often graze over. I want to kind of shift just one last question for you around marriage. You can even mention dating if you want to. What does it look like to grow slow in dating, marriage, relationships in general? Yeah.
Well, I could start with this. I'll tell you what, when Scott and I started dating in 1993, I knew within 2 weeks that was the man I was going to marry. I just knew it.
I thought this was titled Grow Slow.
I know, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. But I knew in 2 weeks. But we didn't get married until 3 years later. The falling in love is the easy part. The actually putting down deep roots and getting to know each other and what matters most and figuring out how to have a disagreement and figuring out, you know, where do our values and our ideals match up? All of those things were what made the I do possible three years later. It wasn't the thing that I felt at 2 weeks. it was what happened later. But I mean, even beyond that, right?
We started learning lessons, though, early, and they were hard-learned lessons. We lived in Omaha right away in our marriage, and Jennifer was a rising star in the Omaha World Herald. I had a great job. I was making a lot of money, which was very important to me at that point. We'd see each other at 10:30 at night and meet and have a burger and do the same thing the next day. And we did that for about a year. And we finally, fortunately, one or both of us said, we can't do this. And fortunately, we were able to make some changes. And those were hard learned lessons. But just that time together and slowing down and taking that time together, I don't know where we would be if we'd be together if we had continued that mm-hmm. schedule.
And that becomes a part of our slow growth story for sure, are the mistakes. And we have made so many decisions in our lives with pro-con list. And we have grown through so much through our pros and cons list. It has taken us on all of the big moves in our lives and even coming back to the farm, which was really hard because people told us, you guys are throwing away your potential. Scott had a law degree. I mean, like he said, we were both rising stars in these areas of our life. And, you know, and for a while I thought, what if people are right? But when we came back, I feel like that was the day one of our growing slow journey. And finally we started to ask ourselves, what if they were wrong? What if we were right all along? And now we can see the fruit of that. But even in that, it's taken years to see.
Yeah, that's a powerful, like, what if they're wrong? Mm-hmm. And I even think that's a great question to end on, even for ourselves, like the race that we're currently running. What if we're running in the wrong direction or winning at a race that really doesn't matter?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are we doing? And thank you both for sitting down. Again, the book is called Growing Slow by Jennifer Dukes-Lee. Want to encourage you to go pre-order a copy, buy one for a friend as well. You can find Jennifer. Scott is not a huge social media guy.
Like, not at all.
We need that hasn't hit the farming community yet. We need to make that happen. No, don't ever get on social media. I had a farmer in my church yesterday. I was like, I was trying to find you on Instagram. And as I was saying it, I didn't even realize what I was saying to him. And the wife started laughing. She's like, yeah, you're not going to find him anywhere online. I'm like, I love you and appreciate you even more. But go find Jennifer Dukes-Lee on Instagram, all social media. Again, thank you both for sitting down with me today.
Thank you.
Thank
so
you,
fun.
Anna.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.